Man's thoughts and actions of yesterday and today are forming the things that will happen tomorrow or soon after. That is where the danger lies, particularly among politicians and the states of mind of people in high places. These people's thoughts and actions are already molding the tragedies of tomorrow. That is why it is so important that whatever one thinks and does is for good. When there are bad thoughts and bad actions that follow them, then worse things follow in consequence. It is the natural sequence of events, it cannot be avoided. Man, and no one else, is responsible for all that happens in your world, good, bad, or indifferent. People are always saying, why does God permit this? Why does God permit that? If there is a God, why doesn't he stop this? But there is no one to blame but themselves. Man creates for himself all the ills that happen in life. Man creates ill health, man creates sickness, man creates wars, intolerance breeds all the dreaded things that happen to man. Until man learns to think differently and, in consequence, act differently, he will be beset by all manner of ills. There is no doubt about that. Anyway, next time I must try to talk about other things of importance. I am so glad you are back again, because now we can resume our talks. Chapter 6. A female incarnation at the time of the French Revolution. Mickey, very brightly, and what can I do for you? Self, Have you many visitors here today, Mickey? Mickey, yes, quite a few. Including your husband, of course. Self, he never disappoints me. Mickey, he's a good man. I reckon you must miss him terribly? Self, I have kept closely in touch with him. Mickey, we must have been older than you, although he's young now. Reverting to his Cockney idiom, you was his right hand, wasn't you? He depended a lot on you. Self, I depended on him, too. Mickey, we'd certainly changed a lot of his ideas. He wouldn't have approved of this, would he? Self, no, although latterly he was changing his views a little. Douglas, suddenly joining the conversation. What are you saying about me? I thought I heard my name mentioned and presumed you were talking about me. Self, I said you had changed your ideas a little before passing. Douglas, I think that is true, in certain respects I had changed my views. I was not quite so narrow, shall we put it like that? Have you anything in mind you want me to discuss today? Self, perhaps there is something you would like to say? Douglas, there are many things, but the difficulty is to know how to put them into words. Self, your various incarnations interest me. Can you remember as far back as that one in ancient China? Douglas, that I must admit is a long time ago. The Chinese dynasty of which we were participants is so remote in time, and such an early one. Looking back, as far as I have been able to gather, Yasents must have been our earliest incarnation. There may have been others earlier, but if so, I have no recollection of then. Although I have been told that we had an incarnation on what is today termed at Cutis. But I have no recollection or remembrance of it whatsoever. If at some later date I should find any details or anything I can enlighten you about concerning it, I will. Self, how does a spirit select a body for incarnation? Douglas, I don't think one can actually say that a spirit on this side selects a body as such, because the body, in a sense, is not that to select. What I suppose one should say is that one selects the environment and the parentage. This may sound very odd, but we have to clarify a great deal when we talk about incarnations. Particularly do we have to try to clarify this business of birth and how we are born, and, of course, why we are reborn. In the first instance, we must understand that although we are individuals in a sense, that is, we have built up certain characteristics and have separate personalities, we are all fundamentally of the same spirit. When we feel the need, as one has done in the past, to return to Earth, we have to decide or at least have some idea as to what would probably be the best environment in which to be born. For instance, if one felt that it was necessary to know poverty and suffering and struggle, then I would obviously choose parents who were, by their very circumstances, impoverished, there would be no point in choosing parents of high birth and ability who bad plenty of the world's goods. The physical body as such may not even have been brought into being, the seed possibly not even sown, when we decide. Sometimes it is necessary to decide where and also, of course, of what race, because one has had an English incarnation, one does not necessarily next time feel the need to return through the parentage of English people. So may decide, for instance, to go into a Chinese or a Japanese connection, it may be necessary to know what it is like under certain conditions in another country in another period of time. Nationalities in themselves, although important in the general aspect of things, are not so important as we see it with our larger viewpoint. On a material basis they are important and, too, if one wants to experience certain things or wishes to try to achieve a certain work of a spiritual nature which will elevate the whole world, if possible, but particularly this nation which one has chosen. For instance, many of the great teachers and prophets of old are 54, a female incarnation at the time of the French Revolution, old souls who have chosen to return at different times into different nationalities. That is why you have the same thread running through the teachings of many of the great prophets of different nationalities. The main structure is there, the main foundation is there. Many people say, some of the teachings of the Buddha are very akin to the teachings of the Christ, or many of the teachings of the Christ are not exactly dissimilar to the teachings of Muhammad and so on. Well, of course, all these great teachers are quite often of the same spirit. By that I do not mean that they are the same individual, which is quite different. There is such a thing, of which, possibly, the people on earth have no realization, as the group spirit, as well as the universal spirit. Many of these great teachers and prophets are of the same group who come from a very, very high sphere, a very advanced stage of being, and have at different periods of history chosen to return under a different guise. In most instances they have been born of humble parentage in the lowest strata, so-called, of material life. Or, if born of high parentage, early in life they have renounced inherited wealth and worldly power. Self, to make the test as hard as possible? Douglas, not only that, there are several factors. When a child is born of so-called good parentage, sent to the best possible schools and his mind crammed with knowledge and information, some of which no doubt is of great service, a lot of this may be directly opposed to spiritual teachings and spiritual consciousness, and prove a barrier rather than a help. If a person's mind is developed on certain lines through certain education it produces, by its very nature, prejudices, it builds up all sorts of things which may hinder the channel of divine inspiration. The minds of the great teachers of the past were open to receive, not cluttered up with strong preconceived notions and ideas instilled into them by their parents and their teachers. They may, of course, have had a religious background. Particularly in the ancient times, the minds of the young men were crammed with religious convictions and instructions, but there again, although many things were added which were important, the basis structure of all the teachings were very similar. Christ was brought up in an orthodox sense, no doubt, as a Jew, but the point is that his mind was not full of isms and strong, hard convictions and opinions. His mind was flexible, and he had this divine inspiration and this wonderful contact with God. The great prophets, by the very simplicity of their nature, opened up the channels which made it possible for truth to infiltrate through to the world. Also, the power which they possessed of a spiritual and psychic nature enabled them to demonstrate their beliefs. Today in your world there is no one who really practices in the same way and is able to show the same conviction to prove their point, or prove their knowledge, to the extent that the great prophets did. The church, of course, does not do this. It makes no attempt even to demonstrate, as Christ did, his knowledge. Christ was able to perform what the world now terms miracles, which were not miracles to him. They were miracles to his disciples and to the people who witnessed them because they did not understand them. Christ understood natural law. He understood the power that was the which could be commanded and used, power which is still the, which has always been there. If only people realized the tremendous vitality and power that exists in the ether, by means of which, when you understand Jaws natural and spiritual, you are able to produce what appears to be a miracle. To people like Christ, these things were normal, natural things, and they were given to him under guidance. He was always surrounded by spirits of a high order, and he was able to draw wisdom and knowledge and power from them. Christ could walk on the waters, Christ could raise the so-called dead because, as you should know, when a person is dead to all outward appearances, it is not necessarily so in the fullest sense of the term. Sometimes it takes several days for the spirit to sever itself from the body, and if the cord which links the two together is still intact, there is the possibility, under certain conditions, for that person, even if it is only temporary, to be brought back to life. There are many instances where people on the verge of burial have been found to be still alive. This is not a miracle. This is something to do with natural law, that until the cord between the spirit and the physical body is completely broken, until the spirit is freed from the auric emanation of the body, until it has completely broken away, there is always the possibility that the individual is not fully dead in the sense of being dead to the material body and dead to the material world. That is why it is never a good thing for burial or cremation to take place too suddenly. At least 4 or 5 days should elapse. Self: yes, of course. Returning to incarnations, dear, I understand we sometimes come back as a different sex. Douglas: that is quite in order. It is pretty obvious that it must be so. I mean, sex by its very nature is purely coincidental. Indeed, in a sense, I know this may sound absurd on the face of it, there is no such thing. There is, on a purely physical basis, one can say this is a man, this is a woman. But it is not as easy as that. There is so much emphasis on this business of sex and on this attitude of mind towards the body, but, in a sense, the body is the least important thing. It is important that one should take care of it and so on, but it is what you are inside. What you are as an individual spirit, what you have accomplished, what you have become, what lessons you have learned, that are important. Yes, of course, I have been female. Self: can you remember a female incarnation you have had? Douglas: had a female incarnation in France in the 18th century. Evidently on this occasion I was a person of some position and wealth. I suppose it was important that I should learn certain lessons because I was very much caught up in the French Revolution, although I was fortunate enough to escape the consequences of revolution. In other words, I was not guillotined. I was able to get away into Austria on the very verge of the catastrophe. I had been very much attached to the French court, and knew the royal family intimately and well. By birth I was Austrian, but I lived in Paris because I married a Frenchman, and I had several children. I can see now that there was a purpose in my being in France and learning the lessons that I learnt there, because although I was brought into contact with certain people of the upper classes, I had always had great sympathy for the poor, and what I could do to help the poor, I did. Indeed, I think I can say that I did much more than most for that age and day, when it was quite a common thing to accept poverty. One thought it was something that nothing much could be done about, but I always felt something should have been done. In fact, I had many discussions with Marie Antoinette on this subject, but she had little time for poverty. It was something she did not really know anything about. I used to try to draw her attention to this and always said that it could well be that at some time, owing to the situation of poverty and so on, something would happen. But I never dreamt of anything so drastic as a revolution. I always felt that something should be done, otherwise who knew what might transpire if the people got out of hand. Of course I was not by any means as helpful as I might have been, but I did what I could, certainly much more than many of the people in the position that I was in at the time. Although I said I escaped, I did so by accident rather than design, because it just happened that I had started on my journey to Austria only a few days before the revolution broke out. I was safely across the border at the time it happened and, of course, hearing what was happening in France I did not return. It would have been foolish to do so. I mention this because it is of interest. Probably if you had not reminded me, or asked about female incarnations, I would not have remembered. My children died very young, as indeed was quite a common thing in those days. There was very little medical attention and knowledge. I had three children, one of whom lived to be 16, the other two died in infancy. Self, how remarkable to remember details like that. Douglas, you and I have been very much associated, but the point is this: it is so important for people to realize that although there are many, many instances of people coming together again and again through rebirth under different circumstances and in different times, one must never place too much importance on the physical or material aspects. What is important is the spiritual progression that is made by those individuals over time itself. There are people who say, "Oh, I do not like the idea of reincarnation and having to come back and perhaps meet and marry some other man or women, as the case may be, but you see, we do not put any stress or attach too much importance to the purely physical side. What is important is that we can only hope to reach any real height of spiritual attainment or achievement when we have gone through many, many different conditions and phases of life, when we have become this, and when we have become that, even if it is only temporarily on earth in a material body. You must see the earth body and the earth life for what it really is. The earth bodies in themselves are but the caskets that hold the soul, that hold the individual spirit that is ever advancing and experiencing. The material world is the schoolroom in which we must learn these lessons. We are merely the pupils and we move from class to class according to our evolution and development. If we do not learn all that is necessary in one class, then we cannot go into a higher class. We still have to stay on, or go back the next term to the same class. We have to remember that sometimes the teachers during that particular period, whom we had thought were excellent teachers, may in themselves not, necessarily, always be so. We may be unfortunate enough to be brought into contact with bad teachers. It is possible that we can be misled and we realize not that the effort that was made to return and experience a new life was wasted, but that we still have not learnt some of the lessons that are necessary, and we return again. Sometimes one may have to wait hundreds of years before returning, on another occasion it may almost be rebirth in a matter of moments or hours. This business of time is always a problem. One must always realize that to a great extent it is an illusion. Of course it is very important and vital on earth, just as the physical body is important and one must care for it. Just as many of the things that may happen are vital and important even though they sometimes seem trivial. Indeed, one might almost say that some of the things that happen to one on earth which seem to be on the surface the most trivial are sometimes the most important, and those things which sometimes seem most important are the most trivial. We must remember that if we are to achieve anything, or we are to advance as spiritual beings, we must experience all manner of things. We cannot live and experience and progress by only knowing good, we must also know bad. We must almost certainly make mistakes. We must sometimes even do things which are wrong. It is only when we have remorse, and we look back and see the chaos that has been created by our foolishness or our waywardness that we learn, and we desire again to return to make good, and to know what it is to do the right thing. These things that happen to us are neither by design nor by accident. I am not suggesting by that everything is preordained, otherwise it would be pointless. What I am trying to say is that though we are given free will, we cannot by our own nature or desiring necessarily always do the right thing. Sometimes the very circumstances of life, the people that we meet and the people that we know, and even our parentage and our teachers and so on create circumstances where we are forced into a situation where we cannot see clearly, and we make mistakes and perhaps we do wrong. I am not excusing the mistakes that not only I but every human being must make, but I am trying to clarify the position that we are all travelers on the road of eternal progression, and each one of us must, by our very nature, make mistakes. People are always saying, "This is wrong or that is wrong." Of course these things, in a sense, are wrong, but if it were not for the wrong, we would never recognize the right. If it were not for the black, we would not understand the purity of whiteness. In other words, we have to accept the fact that we are all the time dealing with complexities and situations created by man himself. God does not interfere with his handiwork. In the beginning God created all things that are good, but if man by his foolishness and his waywardness creates adverse conditions, then he must learn gradually, through suffering and tribulation, the right path and the right way. He must build, and rebuild, and build again if necessary. I now realize more and more the wisdom of life, but it is always difficult to explain this in words. I hope that over the years that are still left to you I will be able to discuss many facets of these tremendous problems, this tremendous truth, but always remember that I can only tell you as much as I can, as best I can, under the prevailing circumstances. Chapter 7, The Danger of Dogma. Mickey, your husband is here. Douglas, it would be very strange if I were not. After all these years of constant communication, it would be very strange if I suddenly disappeared and did not come to talk to you. You would wonder what had happened. Self, I certainly would, dear. Douglas, I should never do that. While there is an opportunity to have communication, I shall take all the advantage I can of it. It means so much to me, and I am certain it does to you, apart from the fact that one hopes eventually to interest others. Have you anything particular in mind you want me to talk about today? Self, talk about anything you like. Douglas, I like to feel that what we discuss is of value and of interest to many, rather than to talk about mundane things as so many do. Of course it is very natural and very necessary in early communications to talk about ordinary things, but there comes a point when one feels this is the moment to branch out and discuss things appertaining not only to oneself, but to all humanity. The whole of life is so vast and so tremendous that every individual soul is caught up in it in some shape or form, one way or other, and we are all so much part of each other. The vast majority of people on earth have no real conception of this. People like to assume, and to some degree of course it is true, that they are separate individuals. It is true that we have separate bodies, and that we have individual spirits. But we are also part of the universal spirit. We are all caught up one with the other in every sense really, not only in your world but in this world too. Although we like to feel that we are individuals, we are really a product of other people's thoughts and ideas over centuries, each of the varying lives that we may have had when we have returned to Earth, though in its own way separate, is part of the complete whole. The tragedy of life is that people go through an existence on earth looking upon themselves completely and absolutely as something apart, as separate individuals with a selfish attitude of mind, and very seldom forgetting self in service and giving oneself to others. All the great teachers realized that the only way to find one's true self was to see oneself. The one idea of so many people on earth is to get out of life all they possibly can, rather than to put what they can into it, to give themselves in love and service and to share their lives with others. The vast majority of people, as far as is humanly possible, they to avoid issues or try to avoid expressing themselves where others are concerned, the fundamental cause of all the untold tragedies of life, the wars, the disputes, and the unhappiness that ensues, that man is self-centered, not only individually, but nationally. This is another great mistake. There should not be this national spirit, this competitive element, there should not be this feeling that our action is the nation and all others are inferior. We know that there are certain races who have not progressed in some respects as much as others, but quite often it is because they have been suppressed and held back. They have not been given the opportunity and education, or, if they have, it has been very limited. This dreadful fear, also, is the curse of the world. We have lived through two great wars which, fundamentally, were brought into being through fear and intolerance. Nations and people should realize that they have an elegance and a duty not just to themselves or their own particular nation, but that they are citizens of the world, and they are all involved in this business of living. They must learn, eventually, to live as one peoples, not as separate peoples because their color or their language is different. Language is obviously one of the greatest barriers to our civilized progress. Indeed, there are so many things that cause us concern, and we want to try if we can to reify and to help. Fat is one of the reasons why we return, not for any individual reasons, although, of course, we like to talk to these we love, but to bring all peoples together as one family and to break down all the barriers that have been built up through tolerance, through religious intolerance and through national intolerance. These are the greatest evils of the world. Self, they are gradually passing away, dear. By the way, I do want to ask you if the whole personality returns to Earth when we reincarnate, or only a facet of the individual consciousness. You talked recently of a group soul. Did you mean that individually or collectively? Douglas, this is very difficult to explain. When one is asked such a question, one realizes the almost hopeless position one is placed in trying to answer it, because by its very nature it is complex. What may apply in one instance would not necessarily apply in another. There is no answer that fits all the varying conditions of incarnations. Although there is a theme, I wish I could explain this better. There is a thread that runs through all lives. It is not necessarily easy to explain the pattern. It is like, I suppose, a great tapestry which is so vast in its conception that in a sense it is probably never finished. There are so many different threads and hues, so much light and so much shade, that one can only perceive fractions of it as one progresses. To some extent one must assume what the completed whole will appear like. It is only when you stand back in the distance that you can see it in all its beauty and you realize the necessity for the light and the shade. The pattern that has been woven over time can only be appreciated when you yourself relax away from it, and look at it, analyze it, or if necessary criticize it, because one learns through criticism as well. We must realize that we are so very complex. I do not mean in just one sense, that is, in a material world, we are also to some extent complex in the spiritual sense. We do not know all the answers, we do not know the complete picture. People often say, "Have you seen God? What is God like? What are the heavenly spheres like?" And so on. All sorts of questions. But we can only perceive, according to our evolution and development and according to our experience, some aspects of these things. It is impossible for any soul on this side, particularly I should imagine the more highly evolved souls, to be able to come back in a material sense and describe, in an earthly language, many things which they have experienced. We can give you little bits here and there. It is like this tapestry of which I was speaking. We can give you a little illumination. We can, as it were, help you to pick up the thread so that you can do your share, or help to bring a little light, or shade if necessary, into the picture. But the point is that it is all tremendously exciting, tremendously complex, and that is, of course, what really constitutes living. Nothing could be more erroneous than this idea some people have that we on this side live, if we live at all that is, in a perfect state of being, because as far as one can imagine, certainly so far as all of us know, there is no such state. There are states of being which have a form of perfection in which you may exist, and you may be so perfectly happy that you may assume that it is a perfect state. But if we ever reached such a condition as a perfect state of being, which would imply that we have the key to all questions, it would become an intolerable condition of life. There would be nothing new, nothing exciting, nothing fresh to discover, there would be no more advancement in any shape or form, and we would become bored and disinterested, and after a time lose the faculty of being able to appreciate life. The beauty and the joy of life is that it is continuous. It is continuous adventure, continuous experience on new strata of knowledge, and illumination of mind and of spirit. It is constant change, although this is not always obvious. Perhaps, in a sense, it is subtle. It takes, if one must use the expression of time where we are concerned, eons and eons of time, and although one may come back to Earth at various times for various reasons, either to gain certain knowledge that can only be gained by earthly experience, or perhaps to do some specific work to encourage and enlighten others who are less informed, even assuming that one returns perhaps a dozen times or more, that in time itself is infinitesimal. One is progressing and experiencing all manner of things on different planes of existence or consciousness and, in consequence, life is always varied. That is the joy of life.